that I take a sign and I'm Christian and walk around with that. It is that by the way I act, the attitudes I carry, the things that I do that way, that I declare myself as one of God's. And so the world and our association, okay, and our association with it influences our attitude or attitudes. Many times we are influenced by bosses that aren't really all that good, or fellow workers that are sloughing off, and things along those lines. But my control over self is tied to my attention to my reactions and who I am, who I intend to be. And so I have a story this evening, which is from Roy Williams, that I've used many times, and it's called A Breakfast Biscuit with Coffee. And Roy said, my friend Carl, contrary to popular belief, the opposite of love isn't hate. After a moment's consideration, I turned and looked at him quizzically. Carl explained, the opposite of love, my friend, is indifference. I decided that Carl was right. Love and hate, powerful emotions both, are separated by only a thin line. We've all seen lovers become the bitterest of enemies, and we've seen bitter rivals become the greatest of friends. Love and hate have much in common. The opposite of both is indifference. There are many companies in America of which I am totally indifferent, companies that to me are invisible. Perhaps the most invisible of all were Hardee's fast food restaurants. Hardee's invisibility began when I stopped at one in Missouri and witnessed a very uncomfortable moment at the sales counter. It could easily have happened anywhere, but it happened at Hardee's. A few days later, at another Hardee's, the egg was cold on my breakfast biscuit, and doubtless they would have replaced it, but not wanting to complain, I just threw it away. The following weekend, when Penny suggested that we pull into Hardee's, I objected, and she told me I was being silly, and I probably was, but 5 minutes after we pulled away from the drive-thru window, Hardee's fate was sealed. My iced tea cup had a tiny hole in the bottom, and before I knew what was happening, my pants were soaked. Hardee's instantly became invisible. I can honestly say that in the following 8 years, I never saw another Hardee's anywhere in America until one day I found myself ravenously hungry in an unfamiliar part of Austin. The only eatery in sight was Hardee's, and reluctantly I pulled up to the drive-thru microphone and ordered a breakfast biscuit with coffee. Would you like cream in your coffee, sir? Asked a pleasant voice. Sure, cream would be nice, I answered. One container or two? I'd like two, please. Thanks for asking. I said, thinking, when did fast food places start giving this kind of service? Would you like me to go ahead and stir the cream in your coffee for you, sir? Wow. Hardee's not only became visible in my world, it became larger than life. With service like that, is it any wonder that I decided the biscuit was the best I'd ever eaten? A lady whose face I never saw renewed my confidence in Hardee's simply by offering to stir cream into my coffee. Have you ever tried stirring cream into coffee while driving a car? Why has no one else ever offered to stir cream into my coffee? Am I the only person in America who is this trivial, petty, and autocratic? Or is there a chance that the people who do so, who do business with your company, might be easily won or lost? The fate of your company is in the hands of your people. Train them well. So, as I consider this, there are a number of lessons that we can learn. It's impossible not to see that the current need for employees right now, I'm talking about today, if we went outside, how many businesses are looking for employees right now and unable to get them? But we do that. The current need for employees, the companies are putting in new employees on, and they're put onto the firing line as soon as they come in the door. And because of that, there's sometimes not as much training as should be. Renee and I have experienced that just recently. We had breakfast in a particular place, and our waitress was absolutely brand new, and she forgot to bring napkins, for instance, and then she brought us the ticket for our food before we received our food, and then all the refills were a little on the slow side and a number of things. But she was the sweetest little girl that you could... She had just not been trained. It was obvious. And so consequently, generally, in days of old, tips were based on how good your service were or was. And in this case, I thought that she did remarkably well for somebody who obviously has not been trained. And so, is that what you would call on-the-job training? That's been a phrase that we grew up with. On-the-job training meant that you would be doing the job that you're doing almost from the beginning. Okay, but I don't think that ever intended to be where there was no training. Training offers more than simple reaction to the various needs of business, that they need to know the alignment of the company toward the job at hand. What is it that I expect for you to do within your job and those types of things? They need to know how to do the job, exactly what is it that you're required to do, and so that you're able to do that. That they need to know what is expected of them that would be, shall we say, cordial. My brother was the head of a number of McDonald's, and they bought some more in Tallahassee at one time, and they had people up there that had lots of training, and they sent my brother up there to find out what's going on because things weren't turning around. And so Bill went up there, and as he was there for just 2 days, I think it is. And he reported, "I want classes. We need classes on how to greet a customer, how to thank a customer, and how to show your appreciation for their coming here." Of which they added that to the training, and the stores took off. You see, I've always taught that it doesn't hurt to have a smile on your face while you're at work. Okay, all of this is something to put people to work without the training, okay, is to expect failure from them. They're not going to be what they should. And I'm going to make the point that in today's marketplace, if we were going to actually have this happen, that more than likely there are more complaints now than there have ever been, because we're just putting people in and hoping they do a good job. Now then, I want to remind you of Proverbs, the 22nd chapter, verse 6. "Train up a child in the way he should go, and even when he is old, he will not depart from it." And I want us to see that the parallel of these things is the same. That training involves the sense of accomplishing a job and in a certain way. That there is a reason why that certain way is so. And each of us has a different household, and therefore we may not do the same job exactly the same way. I might use loading the dishwasher as an example of that. Well, for much of my life, we didn't have a dishwasher. My parents had twins, and they said, "We already own one." And my brother and I could wash dishes pretty fast, okay? And so anyway, we had that, and so the sense of loading a dishwasher didn't come to much later. Okay, and yet how you put things in there affects how clean they become or how much you can run in the dishwasher. Then there's a certain amount of detail that is needed for the job to be complete. When is it actually finished? There's a time frame in which the job should be accomplished, and we don't talk about that much anymore, but the idea of doing things quickly and that our productivity be what it should be is not generally accomplished. Now it seems to be that we ignore that. That there are issues that may interrupt the accomplishment of the task, and then when interrupted, what are you allowed to leave your task for to go do? And those types of things go on in every business and are as necessary. And then there's the attitude. What is your attitude while at work? I think that every personality has differences to it, has idiosyncrasies, if you will. What has your idiosyncrasy got to do with the job? Now, I may be asking that, you know, to all the old folks, where you might say nothing. That whatever my idiosyncrasies, I don't like cleaning the bathroom, which is part of where we were. And it was before we had maintenance that would do things like that. Our crew took turns cleaning the restrooms. And I took my turn as the manager as an example. Why would I do that? Because work is work. It was not what work are you necessarily doing. Does it matter how you feel about the task? Does your energy level have anything to do with the task? Oh, I don't really want to do that, so I'm going to drag my feet. Is that going to do it? Do task and feelings mix? And if feelings influence the task, then what is the result? And many times it's going to be slower productivity or a lesser job, many different things. Okay, so I ask you that because as you begin to raise children, children always have a feel for what they're going to be asked to do. And it may not be a positive one. I want to back up for just a second and make this statement. I find it really interesting that very small children love to help. They want to help all the time. And they do. And then as we teach them how to, they lose their love for it, and now I don't. I think that maybe we need to think about how we were teaching things in the manner of how we were teaching those things because of it. If taught well, the child will continue to maintain the integrity of his work ethic even when he's old. I think that's what Proverbs was telling us, is that if you train up a child and you train them up well, they will hold to what they believe because their work ethic is part of who I am, not simply what mom and dad would expect of me. This is like learning to love God and not simply know who he is. And we have that. So what if the task is to follow God, which becomes the question of all questions? The same issues are in place in teaching, no matter the subject, that they need to know what it means to serve God. They need to know what it looks like and what the attitude is and what the details are and all those kinds of things. But the truth is they need to be taught the love of doing the thing they need to do. And I tell you, that is the hardest question of all things. How do you teach love? The exceptions are going to always be considered with the same care as the task received. And then there needs to be a sense of our monitoring parents of, is the job done well or is just the job done? So as I consider all of this, and you understand that the applications of the story offer the results of those who end up with the task you performed. So are you going to get a cold biscuit and a leaky cup, or are you going to have someone that stirs in the cream and sees to it that you're happy with what you got? You see, that is a personal thing. I think that Roy found out that tasks don't just happen unless the one involved is paying attention, looking to please, and that their own sense of worth is involved in it. It is here that I want us to see that teaching our children is important. One, that the task is done well and that all parts are completed, and that there are no bad attitudes that exist after the completion. But the difference in a good job and a poor one is in the monitoring of the action by the parents or by employees. It is not simply that you monitor and come and see if it was done, but that you find out, was it done the way it should have been done? No teaching is complete if steps are left out, details are not kept, or if attitudes shift to negative displays. And in all of these things, it doesn't matter if they lose a job, because really, that's not what we're talking about. Okay, if they are grounded over poor work or some other physical thing happens, but when it comes to spiritual things, the loss of eternal is eternal and the price is torment. How will you be measured by the customer? And how will God measure you if you don't teach those who are entrusted to you? I know the heaviness of what I'm asking or suggesting here. And so I agree with Roy. Train them well. And the training on the job is training on the job, but in the way it should be. So, as a side note, can you train them well if you don't know how to do the thing yourself? How do you teach compassion if you don't show compassion? How do you teach love to love strangers if you never have a stranger in your midst? How do you do many of the things that God commands if we don't train them well? Consider prayer as an example. If we teach our little children to pray before they go to sleep and you monitor that every night, do you realize that when you stop monitoring it is when things go wrong? Now, I'm not saying that we need to stay over our children forever, but what I am talking about is some of the things that I remember as being so very funny, that I have one that's praying, and the quick prayer was, "Oh Lord, thank you for Mom and Daddy, thank you for Grandmom and Granddaddy, thank you for whatever relative they could remember. Then thank you for my bed, thank you for... for my toys, thank you for," and again, running through those very things. And then his eyes were closed, and they'd look, and thank you for my clothes, and thank you for what he peeked at. And it was as cute as could be, and I understand it completely. But teaching him to pray to God for things that matter, the things where relationship is involved, where love for God matters, is something else. And so when I say we stopped monitoring when we knew they would say their prayers at night, but maybe we should keep monitoring, are they saying prayers that are valid? Praying properly is according to God's instruction, but it is also from the heart. And how do you measure a child's heart? And that becomes a question. I hope we consider the idea that life takes too much of our focus so that we become busy and then lack in some things. But we must be vigilant at teaching outright, about teaching by example, and by being thorough, if we expect our children to be the spiritual adults that we hope that they will be. I remember crowing in my own mind when my children became Christian. I remember crowing even more when my grandchildren became Christian. We need to be thorough on this. We need to be constant on this. We need to be loving in this. When I move training away from simply the family, the personal family, I always think of our family here as a spiritual family. And in that spiritual family, we need to have that same thing where we train well, that we cause each other to think and that we would share and help one another. That is the idea of being family. So that we may all get to heaven together. If you're not a Christian, become one. Make that decision. Do the thing that needs to be done. And if not, if you've already been Christian and that you have maybe shortchanged some of the things that need to be done, let's change that. And if we can help you, won't you come as we stand and sing?